You're listening to the newest episode of Adrift, written and read by Doyce Testerman. Every few days, we'll bring you another installment of the story as it's written, as part of an insane overcomplication of what should be a simple NaNoWriMo project. You may be downloading these podcasts via iTunes or Podiobooks, and if so, I'd like to invite you to come by my website, doycetesterman.com, to comment and join in the conversation, or you could contact me directly at doyce@doycetesterman.com. With all that said, let's get on with the story.
"The practices are crude children times," said Bilobil. John and I stared at our furry guide. "Did you..." I began.
"Not a word," replied John.
Bilobil looked back and forth between the two of us, then tried again. "Jit makes instruction of no densities with me," she said. "I am straight, like..." She paused, then her lips drew back in a truly impressive display of sharp teeth. She patted the bulge of her carry pouch. "The instructions of infant," she nodded several times. Again, we stared. "The instructions are simple," I guessed. "Okay, sure," Bilobil said.
"Oh, this is reassuring," John muttered.
"Jit makes the advancement," Bilobil explained. "The passages of space are not rigid to Bilobil." It indicated its eyes, and I could see the flicker of what were probably nictitating membranes. "Jit makes happy reception of gifts in the newest homes," she pointed out the viewport at the other ship's airlock. "Save your captain if you like, makes followings when the orifice is yawns." I looked at John.
"It bothers me that I got that," he muttered.
"We understand," I said to Bilobil. "The path is very rigid," Bilobil warned.
"Really not sure you fully grasp the nuances of that word," John said.
"We understand," I repeated. "We have done this before." John coughed.
"More or less," I added.
Bilobil nodded. "Captain, if you like, makes voids of presences in these spaces," she chirruped, shooing us through the inner hatch. John swung the hatch shut, spun the lock, and glanced through the hatch window, then back at me.
"For the record," he said, "she's doing this with her kid or cub or whatever she'd call it." He shook his head. "She should get paid a damn sight more than double."
Inside the airlock, Bilobil tapped buttons on the flickering control panel. Her curved claws and the unfamiliar controls forced her to move with particular care, but there was little chance of a miskeyed command. Although the ship was an alien design, it held to the universal aesthetics of any military craft, a command interface that even the slowest of drafted recruits could comprehend. A large punch release next to the outer hatch began pulsing. Bilobil moved toward it, hooked one of her upper paws to a wall-mounted rung, cradled both of her middle limbs around her pouch, and punched the button. The hatch cycled open quickly enough that even had she not been holding onto the brace, she would not have collided with the irising portal. She looked up and to her right in the direction of the other ship's hatch, then let go, kicked off, and was gone. I watched the space where she had been for a few seconds, then punched the buttons on our side of the hatch that closed the outer hatch and filled the space with air. The system response was sluggish, but reassuringly implacable. After 2 minutes, the light above the inner hatch flickered to life, and John swung the door wide.
"Also for the record," he said, "this is still a bad plan."
"Oh yeah," I stepped through the hatch. "Oh yeah." The hatch of the other ship was swinging open as I reached the outer viewport and looked up. Looks like the first part of our plan went exactly right.
"Fantastic," John said. "Too bad that's not the hard part."
"We just need to push off the right direction after the Atmo events," I said. "Don't let it push us out. It's just like any zero-G."
"Except for only getting 15 seconds of consciousness before we pass out," John replied.
"Details." I waved one hand in the air as though swatting away annoying insects while I tapped my way through the code sequence, trying hard not to think about what was about to happen and checking every few seconds to make sure that the target hatch was still open. The light above the airlock began to pulse. I reached out and grabbed the same handle Bilobil had used. A few feet away, John gripped its twin on the opposite wall.
"Keep your eyes slitted," he said.
"I know."
"Let your breath out as much as you can," he said.
"I know."
"Don't open your mouth if you can help it," he said.
"I know." He glanced out the hatch, nodded, took a few deep breaths, and blew the air out.
"If I die, I am gonna fucking haunt you," he said.
"I know," I muttered, and punched the release. The hatch started to cycle open. The air rushed past us and out, and I tensed, ready to sight in on the opposite hatch as best I could and jump. All the lights in the control panel went dead. The artificial gravity gave out. The hatch froze, half open. The benefit of being a pessimist lies in never being entirely surprised when something goes particularly bad. I was still trying to make sense of what had happened through eyes that had already been nearly blinded by freezing tears when John's shadow shot through the meter-wide hole. I pushed away from the wall, squeezing my eyes shut and rubbing the ice away as I felt my way through the aperture with the other hand. I couldn't find my way. The ship seemed to cling to me, unwilling to let me leave it behind. I strained to pull myself through the hatch until something finally seemed to give and I was through. Going by feel, I clung to the lip of the half-open hatch and tried to get my bearing as best I could, blind. I felt something strike the hull, probably John, kicking off toward the other ship. I needed to get a long enough look to get a bearing. Pushing off without it was suicide. Again, I rubbed ice away from my painfully tearing eyes, trying to ignore the burning of my skin, the awful knot roaring in my ears. I couldn't make my eyes open. My facial muscles contorted as I tried to will open my eyes, to overpower the pure animal instinct that wanted to keep them shut, that screamed at me to curl into a protective ball until the attack ended. My head swam. I fought the dizziness. In a vacuum, the body immediately starts extracting oxygen directly from the blood, leading to unconsciousness in roughly 15 seconds, even if death by asphyxiation took a few more minutes. There was no way I should be... I opened my eyes. Only a crack, though the effort felt like I was lifting the binturong. The other ship's hull was a gray smear, the hatch a darker smudge that seemed to waver and shift. I bent my legs and pushed, flinging my arms out in front of me. The world went black. Before too long, the rabbit perked up her ears.
"Do you hear that?" she asked.
The princess listened, but didn't hear anything. "What is it?" she asked the rabbit.
"I'm not sure," said the rabbit.
A little while later, the princess could hear it too. It sounded like 100 bells were tinkling up ahead. The sound got louder and louder until they came into a clearing and looked up.
"Well,"
said the princess, "that makes sense." They had found the frozen waterfall. The noise they heard was the ice as it fell, hitting rocks and ledges as it went. At the very top of the waterfall, on a rocky clump of earth, at the end of a long ledge, the princess could see a beautiful flower, the color of fire.
"That's the flower I need, I think," said the princess.
Her friends looked up at the waterfall, trying to see a way to get to the top.
"I can run very fast," said the rabbit, "but the waterfall's even faster, and the rocks are very high, and I'm not a good climber."
She shook her head.
"I do not think I can reach the flower."
"I can climb very high," said the squirrel, "but the waterfall's very hard, and I'm not strong enough to keep from being pushed off the rocks."
He shook his head.
"I don't think I can reach the flower."
The princess nodded and looked at the waterfall.
"Then I will have to try," she said, even though she didn't think she would be able to reach the flower either. "I have to try."
She had just started walking toward the first ledge at the bottom of the waterfall when a voice said,
"Maybe I can help."
The princess, the rabbit, and the squirrel turned around. Sitting behind them was a strange-looking animal. Her fur was black, and her body was thick and strong, although she wasn't very big. Sitting on the ground, she only came up to the princess's stomach. She had long ears with funny tufts of fur on the end and strange golden eyes. She didn't look confused at all.
"Hello," said the princess.
She looked at the strange animal a little longer. "I don't mean to be rude, but what are you?" The animal looked up at the princess with her golden eyes and said,
"I'm a bear cat.
You can call me Bin."
"A bear cat? There's no such thing as a bear cat."
"There's no such thing as a bear cat," said the princess. The bear cat shrugged and said, "This is the forest of anything." The princess had to admit she had a good point.
"I'm trying to find some medicine ingredients for the queen," said the princess. "She's very sick."
"I know," said Bin. "You need a petal from the flower at the top of the waterfall."
"Just a petal?" asked the princess.
"Just a petal," said the bear cat. "The whole flower has more medicine than anyone would ever need." She licked her paw, then rubbed it along the side of her face, smoothing down her fur. "And if you took it all, there wouldn't be any left for anyone else." The princess nodded, and Bin stood up and walked up next to her, looking at the waterfall for a long time.
"It will be hard," she finally said, "but I think I can reach the flower."
The princess watched as Bin started up the waterfall. It wasn't very long before she could see why she was called a bear cat. When she could, Bin stayed out of the hard, tinkling, frozen water as it fell. To do this, she leaped from rock to rock, clinging to tiny ledges with long claws and scrambling ever upward. Some of the time, though, Bin couldn't avoid the water and had to force her way through the waterfall to get to the next ledge. That was when the princess could see her bareness. She would put her head down and charge into the water, using her claws to hold on and her strong shoulders and legs to keep from being knocked over. The princess could tell it was making Bin very tired, though. As she got closer to the top of the waterfall, her claws started to lose their grip, and her head started to hang down. Just before she got to the final ledge that led to the flower, she slipped in a stream of water and almost fell. Her back legs went over the edge, hanging out into the air while Bin struggled to hang on. "Come back down, Bin!" the princess shouted as loud as she could over the noise of the waterfall. "I don't want you to get hurt. Please, please come down!" The bear cat turned her head to look over her shoulder at the princess with her amazing golden eyes. After a long look, she turned back to the ledge, pulled herself back up, and climbed the rest of the way to the flower. As the princess watched, Bin plucked the fiery petal from the flower and, now even more tired, climbed back down the cliff. When she had reached the princess again, Bin carefully offered her the petal. The princess took it, but then dropped to her knees and hugged the bear cat around her furry neck. "Thank you," said Bin. "That feels good." "I told you to come back down," said the princess. "I didn't want you to get hurt." "I know," said Bin. "That's why I was able to make it the rest of the way." The princess sniffed and nodded, although she didn't quite understand, and stood up. She turned to her new friends. "I have to go back to the castle now," she said. "I'd like it if you all came with me."
"Yes," said Mira. "Great," said Mac.
Bin didn't say anything at first. She just looked at the princess with her golden eyes. The princess held her breath. "All right," she finally said. "That sounds nice." So they all went back to the castle and gave the ingredients to the doctors, who were very impressed and got to work on the medicine right away. The quiet doctor even gave Bin a scratch behind the ears. The next day, the king came to the princess and told her that the queen was awake and feeling much better. The princess ran all the way to the queen's room and right up to the queen herself, who smiled when she saw her. "The doctors told me what you did for me," she said, "even though they said it was impossible." The princess smiled and thought of her new friends, especially Bin the bear cat. Sometimes, when it's impossible, you have to try anyway.
Thanks for listening to this installment of Adrift, written and read by Dois Testerman. This podcast is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivative Works 3.0 license. For more information, visit creativecommons.com. Adrift was first conceived as a serialized flash fiction story told 140 characters at a time via Twitter, and in fact continues today and every day as an ongoing story. You can check it out on Twitter at www.twitter.com/finris or on my website at doistesterman.com/adrift. Our intro music is Invisible Walls by Revolution Void off their album Increase the Dosage, available from jamendo.com. Our outro music is Strutton by Triad, also available from jamendo.com. There are many people to thank for their help and input on this project, but the two that jump right out at me, sometimes literally, are my wife Kate and Tim White, perhaps best known in this arena for his Return to Northmore podcast. One of these individuals has been an unfailing, unflagging, ever-optimistic beacon of support and positive thinking. The other has given me tremendous technical help, suggestions, and advice as I learn how much I don't know about podcasting. Which one is which? I'll leave as an exercise for the listener.
Speaking to this tiny box, through Wiresworth's walk, strutting down browser blocks, worldwide transmission talk, fuzzy flicker FM balls, beer and dash to the walls, podcast, broadcast, signal, no noise, global infinite internet choice, music chunks get it all for free. Major labels don't get me. Contracts kiss my industry. I'll sing the system to its knees.